Hello and welcome to a special episode of Irreverent Testimony. We just got done watching the Democratic debate, the first one, from Las Vegas, and we were treated, for some reason, Chris Matthews had to have Wayne Newton on to tell us how great Trump was and how terrible all the Democratic candidates were. I know that my opinion's totally changed from that. But anyway, unlike the last GOP debate, I do not have a massive migraine headache.
I feel soothed.
Made it through this one okay.
Yeah, so this is Travis, yeah. Rachel, and Dana. And we're going to break down this debate the best we can, although many of the reactions seems to be the same
yeah,
for the candidates.
Sort of. I don't think our opinion jibes quite with a lot of the online flash polls, but you know that's just who has the best cyber campaign and has people...
Right. And even in this room, I don't think our consensus is necessarily the same.
But we'll talk about it.
So here's to the debate.
Yep. And we haven't had enough to drink yet where it'll probably descend into fisticuffs, but you never know. So I'm going to turn it over to you guys because you guys took copious notes, whereas
I did.
I penned a quick diary on Daily Kos with my opinion. But let's hear from you guys what your takes were.
All right. Well, the first thing that I want to talk about was guns. That was the first issue they really addressed, which I think was appropriate considering that gun violence in Oregon. And they addressed Sanders first, which I thought was smart because his opinion on guns is sort of the most non-liberal. Even though he's the most liberal, his opinion on guns is the least liberal. So they addressed him on guns. And he went back to the, he had a D-minus rating with the NRA. I don't care. I wish it had been an F, I guess, much as I love the man. And then he went back to the suicidal, homicidal, mental illness thing, which, of course, yes, that's always an argument, but I also think that we shouldn't necessarily lump mental health into gun violence. We should also address mental health directly. And Dana, I want you to talk about that.
Yeah,
for a minute.
So I actually I showed up a little bit late to this debate. I actually missed this particular portion, but I am familiar with Sanders' stumps on this particular topic. And he does have a tendency to say that he is from a state that has a different history or a different, relationship with guns than the country at large. When we recently saw him speak this weekend, he didn't really rely on that. He really did say that he was very much on board with some of the more major, liberal causes on the gun front. Not necessarily, everything you could possibly do, but all the things that were very common sense. And he didn't say anything that I think that really anyone would really have too many problems with. I mean, assault rifles ban... expanded background checks.
Do you mean in Boulder or tonight?
In Boulder. I actually didn't hear him tonight.
I was asking you to talk about the mental health debate. So he keeps equating mental health.
That's what I was going to get to is that even at the debate, or not the debate, but the stump speech that we heard him on Saturday, and it seems like that's what he's stuck to tonight, was the idea that, now is the time to talk about mental health. That we talk about mental health in the concept of we only care about mental health protections for people who do show any sort of homicidal or suicidal thoughts. And that I don't think that he means this. I just think that he's a little tone deaf on the idea that maybe when we're talking about universal health care and we talk about universal mental health care being lumped into that, that we shouldn't necessarily lump that necessarily into the gun debate. We do need that for people other than people who end up having homicidal
or suicidal
thoughts.
It's topical because of mass shootings.
Everyone else brings it up, right? Like the Republicans, that's their big thing. Not gun control, mental health.
Right, because then they don't have to take on the NRA.
Exactly. And so then Democrats are like, well, mental health is an issue. But to John Oliver's point, he did a Last Week Tonight a couple weeks ago that was so profound, that was about, yes, mental health is an issue. And then he broke down how terribly we are failing on mental health in this country.
Absolutely.
How terribly we are failing. And he ended up saying at the end of it, you know what, if you're going to link gun violence to mental health and you're going to fund it, good, do it. but do something for the people that actually suffer from mental health disorders and actually fund something that could help them. And he broke down how many ways we're failing them. And so in that way, for me, Bernie is like a little tone deaf, but just only because I'm so libby.
I'd like to add something to that, which is that it's not that it's a libby thing or a gun violence thing. It's that when you only talk about mental health in the context of gun violence,
it
makes you sound like you don't actually really give much of a shit about mental health. It makes it sound like you give a shit about gun violence.
It kind of makes you sound like you don't give a shit about either, because
what
does this – turning the discussion completely to mental health, what does that do for the thousands of kids each year who die in accidental gun shootings because they find their parents' guns, or the teenagers in schools who get in a fight, or the road rage incidents, or the really depressed people who have too much access to guns? And yeah, you make the mental health argument there, but the guns are still available for them.
No, precisely that. And so I don't think that you actually do any good talking on the mental health issue in the wake of a gun violence problem, because you're not going to help either one.
No.
And I think that,
you're going back to is the old NRA line. The guns don't kill people. The people kill people.
Not only that, you're not helping people with mental illness. If you want to help people with mental illness, we should do that. And we should talk about doing that in a really substantial way.
And get the funding for
it. But we shouldn't talk about it only when there's a gun shooting. Because people exist with mental illness who do not kill people.
Yeah, no,
and they need help too.
The threshold for getting help should not be because
you're suicidal
or homicidal.
Somebody, right?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, sure, you're depressed, you're anxious, and your life's a mess. Well, as long as you're not planning to go shoot anybody, then, you know.
Or you didn't already shoot somebody.
Right.
As long as you didn't already shoot someone, we don't really give a shit about you. Afterward, we would like to blame your mental illness on the shooting so we don't have to talk about guns.
Well, moving on from there, in full disclosure, we're Bernie supporters. We've actually hosted a Bernie watch party here, and but we were not impressed with his explanations of his questionable gun record. It certainly hasn't alleviated our concerns with that.
Well, one thing that I do want to say that I will probably say multiple times about Bernie's thing is that he's mildly tone deaf in a way. And I've said it before and I'll say it again. He kind of shows up on the stage like, don't you know who the fuck I am? Like, you know, when I say that I'm going to help this group of people based on this policy, he kind of assumes
sure, that's
that there's
style.
An entire group of people that know, like, yeah, he's been helping us all along. He'll be now helping on this new thing. Nobody knows who the fuck he is.
He's a
the
tough
black
guy
people
from
in
York,
South Carolina have no idea who he is.
Right, we've
but they knew
about
who
that.
Hillary Clinton
yeah.
is,
yeah.
right? So, yeah, he needs to address that.
Yeah, my consensus was I think he did really, really well with his most ardent supporters tonight. I certainly don't think he hurt himself with any of them. Don't know how much he expanded his appeal across that, though. And we'll see in the next coming days what the polls say. But
wait, before we get off this, though, this gun thing, he did actually support a law shielding gun manufacturers and ammunition manufacturers from lawsuits against victims of gun violence.
Yeah.
Which is bullshit.
And tonight, yeah, it is bullshit. And tonight he said, no, he's against that. He didn't really explain why he supported it then versus now.
And what changed his mind.
Yeah, he didn't explain any of that. They only get 4 seconds on CNN, so he didn't get a chance to explain.
Yeah,
but
we'll
he did say, I'm against the shielding law. So at least that's, I guess, a move forward or –
In a more general sense, I don't buy the whole, well, you know, I'm in a rural state and my constituents are just duck hunters. It's like, okay, yeah, but if you're in the Senate and you're sponsoring or voting on legislation that's going to affect the entire country, you can't just fall on that and say, well, my constituents are just a bunch of duck hunters. Too bad if this affects you and your family on the south side of Chicago. I mean, that's not an acceptable answer to me.
No, I completely agree. And I think this is way too big to get into on this podcast because we're going to focus on the debate. But part of the gun shielding law rings really true to me for the shielding about the people who provide the death penalty drugs right now, where they've said we will shield the manufacturers of the drugs to say that they're not going to be
in Oklahoma.
Yeah, they
that didn't come up tonight either.
No, of course it didn't. I just it rings so true to me, like, that, you know, why would we shield the manufacturers of something that are the, you know,
because they have the lobbyists,
harbingers of death.
Well, specifically, this did come up in the debate tonight, And I'm going to give Martin O'Malley a little shout out here because he specifically pointed out the Aurora shooting victims.
Yes.
Who have sued a gun manufacturer or an ammunition manufacturer, I think, specifically. And these are parents whose daughter was murdered by the Aurora shooter, whose name we will not mention. And they are they sued this gun manufacturer who sold this shooter 4,000 rounds of online. Military ammunition online. And they are now being charged $200,000 in court fees.
They lost.
Because yeah. they sued him.
They sued
and
lost.
They lost.
Yeah.
And so O'Malley came out and said, you know, this is unacceptable. And when everyone was asked, this is a thing I'm going to bring back again and again tonight, and you guys are going to disagree with me about this, but I'm going to keep saying it. O'Malley said things like, oh, I did that. Because he did.
Yeah.
Because he was a mayor and then a governor. And
he had a legislative record to back up
does.
A lot of his points.
Yeah, because as a mayor, and especially as a mayor, but also as a governor, he's allowed to say, like, I did this already. And in my state, this is what worked. And he's not Mitt Romney in terms of, I did this in my state and it worked, but I'd really like to pretend like it didn't happen.
Because, I was in Massachusetts.
I did this.
That should be kept in the state or city level.
It worked.
Yeah.
And here's what happened. And so for him, that he specifically brought up the Aurora shooting parents and sort of what happened to them. And he specifically said, like, in our state, in Maryland, because he was the mayor of Baltimore and then the governor of Maryland, that he specifically passed this, and this is what happened. And
he had a reasonable comeback for when they said, well, you were part of, you know, this, the police in Baltimore were out of control and you had a hand in changing some of these laws. I thought his comeback to that was fairly reasonable. If I mean, as a white guy, I can't speak for how the African-American community will accept his answers to that, but it sounded well thought out and reasonable.
Yeah, he said basically, like, to Bernie Sanders, like, I understand that your public consensus on guns is a thing. Mm-hmm. Your political consensus on guns does not make sense to me. And I was like, what? Martin O'Malley, like, good point. And then he was like, it's not about fucking rural Vermont. It's about LA and Chicago and Denver
Baltimore.
And New York and Baltimore. Yeah. Like, yeah, it's not about that. I thought he did good on that point.
And, you know, just to make it clear to all the listeners, Rachel is really hard on Sanders about his stance on guns.
I'm sorry,
well,
it's
you
true.
Know, we all
she,
should
she,
be.
She gives him no quarter.
Progressives should be hard on whoever their favorite candidate is. On the things that matter to them, we can't be blind sycophants and just be cheerleaders and then just twist in the wind for what we actually believe if our candidate says so. I mean, people do this on all sides, and that's not what being a real liberal and a progressive is.
No, I completely agree with that, but I'd say Rachel, Bernie Sanders, if you're listening.
Of course he is.
You have somebody who is really going to call you out on anything about guns because she's listening for you.
I'm going to call you
You're
out
wrong
on
this
shit,
issue, and
way.
You've got somebody who's going to call you on it hardcore.
All right,
all
one more thing.
Yeah.
Bernie, by the way, I'm going to call you out on all your shit. I don't have a lot of shit right now, but for now it's guns.
Well,
okay,
yeah, and, we're understand, we're Bernie supporters.
I love you, Bernie. I came to Boulder for you. I would like to point out what Webb said.
Not a long drive, but a long
it's an arduous journey emotionally for me.
Yeah.
So Webb came out, and they noted that he had an A-minus rating with the NRA.
With the NRA, yeah.
And then he brought up, like, gangs and drive-bys and scary people. Like, very 90s argument. Very, like, oh, honey, we're not doing that anymore.
His entire vibe kind of really feels like 1996 politician. Like,
yeah, Jim Webb, he came out creepy. He got really annoying when all he would do was complain about what little time he had to speak, and then half the time he did get to speak was still complaining about how little time he had to speak.
Yeah, exactly.
And then he completely went off the rails into crazy war man gargoyle.
I think my favorite thing I saw on Twitter at that particular moment was that Hillary Clinton should just go right up on the mic and announce that announce that she would nominate him for the White House timekeeper.
Well, yeah. You know, I think Dana looked at each other when he was doing all his war hawkish stuff and were like, I bet he's going to be on the short list for VP so they can cover their military flank. But then when he went off the rails with the whole, my my favorite enemy is the guy I blew up in Vietnam. That was just like, whoa.
That's morbid.
What are you even talking about?
Yeah. I mean, maybe
I mean, I don't even know what audience that was even meant for.
Is he angling for the GOP Veep spot? I don't even know if the GOP would like that. Oh, yeah, they would.
Oh, they would love it.
The person who I made the most enemy of is the person who I threw a grenade at.
But, or no, threw the grenade at him, but then he's not around anymore because ostensibly Jim Webb shot him.
I threw the grenade at him, but he's not around anymore.
Well, whatever. It was somebody Jim Webb killed in war.
Right.
Yay.
And
killing.
He's most proud of that.
All right. So finally, when they got to O'Malley, he basically said, look, when I was the governor of Baltimore, I passed this law and it had such great public consensus that the NRA dared not to even oppose it. And then he talked about how they did not have a referendum on the ballot in Maryland for opposing the gun law, which is like the first time that's ever happened ever. And he said the reason for that was that that was the difference between the public consensus and the Washington consensus. And I thought that was actually a moment for him that I was like, fucking great point, right? So the NRA has been able to recall some Colorado Dana, right? Senators and people when they voted for very basic gun laws. And he was saying in Maryland,
turbulent for them.
Well, they actually got recalled, right? In Pueblo. And he was saying in Maryland, they had such a public consensus that the Washington consensus didn't actually come through. And so that they didn't even have a referendum on the ballot in Maryland when he was the governor. And so he was able to pass his gun laws without much opposition because he had such public support.
Rachel, you should really be the O'Malley campaign manager or outreach because I'm sure you paid much closer attention.
Well, I paid attention to all three. I was really interested in all of them. I really wanted to see
In a broader sense, I was impressed with O'Malley tonight, but also being a cynical political observer, I don't think his delivery was very good. I didn't like his cadence.
I don't know. I would be less shallow than cadence.
I would say it's not necessarily about the presentation. It's the fact that there isn't much behind that. What it felt like to me was that was debate prep. It felt like debate prep and less like from the heart.
But it was legit. It was legit.
No, I'm going to disagree with both of you on this. I'm going to just – okay. Let me just say this. I'm a Bernie supporter. Second to Bernie, I'm a Hillary supporter. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to say Martin O'Malley has a strong fucking record. He was the mayor of Baltimore. That's a rough fucking city. That's a city that he did a lot for. Not like Cory Booker a lot, but he didn't do much worse. Mm-hmm. Well, okay.
Cory Booker did amazing. What are you fucking talking
about? I'm saying
about?
That he did a lot for Baltimore. Baltimore is the city that is really struggling, and he did a lot for that city. And in fact, because he did so much for Baltimore, he was elected the mayor of Maryland. So I don't think that we can just write him off as some sort of political hack that knows nothing. And some of the stuff he said tonight was right. And a lot of the stuff he said tonight, I'm going to repeat this over and over, was, yeah, I already did that. Yeah, I did that in my state and it worked. Yeah, this is how I got that done in my state and it worked. So I don't think we can just write him off. I'm not an O'Malley supporter, but I'm just saying I'm going on the record here as saying
he had a strong showing.
He is going to go up in the polls, and both of y'all have said nah, but I'm saying he's going to go up in the polls.
He'll go up in the polls, but from what? From 0 to 3%? I mean,
I don't know. He's a white guy that's not a socialist or a woman.
No, he's not. He's not going to get anywhere.
I actually totally disagree. I think that that's a really cynical way to think about it.
What, mine or hers?
Hers. Rachel, I think that's a really cynical way to think about it. I think that is a cynical way to think about it.
Seriously.
If you're saying that he's going to go up because he's the only person who's not a socialist or a woman, and so that's going to put him up there because he finally got fucking noticed because he said a couple words about a couple things about how he had done a couple things in a city that has not really done. It's gone from, you know, 0 to 3.
But it went from zero to negative five, and he brought it up to 3.
Yeah, well,
he's not Cory Booker, but he's the secondary one of those.
I'm not saying he's ineffective. I'm saying that he's marginally effective.
No,
and his showing as far as on the public stage,
he was a great mayor. All I'm saying is he was a great mayor.
I don't think we should invest too much time and energy into O'Malley because
all I'm saying is he's a great mayor.
He helped himself tonight and possibly in the Veep race.
No, I'm not. Hold on, all y'all, stop. He was a great mayor,
mm-hmm.
not like Cory Booker style. He didn't rescue fucking burning women from buildings, but he did turn around Detroit in a significant way. Detroit was Ish. A shit show, so, you know, significant is subjective, obviously. But he made a great change in that specific city and got elected governor of the state. And I think that that's not something we can take away from him. I am not a Martin O'Malley supporter.
Wait, are we talking about Detroit or Baltimore?
Maryland. I'm sorry, Maryland.
It's okay. Some of us have maybe been drinking a little tonight.
A little bit, sorry. no, but I think that he's made a significant impact, and I think that the people of his state like him. And don't be a dick.
He was just polled. Actually, they just polled Maryland recently, and he was behind Clinton and Bernie.
Of course he's behind them. All I'm saying is he's going to jump. All I'm saying is he's going to jump in the polls after the debate tonight.
He'll rise. I think he'll rise a little bit, but not to where he's going to challenge the two front runners. I don't think there's any way.
I don't even think that he can challenge them at a point to a point where he can push them into a position where they need to even jump to his talking points. One of the things that I took interest in
maybe on the green energy stuff. I thought he was really strong on that.
Yeah, I agree.
He's got a pretty bold and comprehensive plan.
I feel that Bernie and Hillary both have plans. I would say Bernie's is a little more comprehensive. Hillary's is a little more widespread.
We talking about green energy?
Green energy plan. Mm-hmm. Well, I think his is a little bit more specific. Like, let's take what I have done and let's make it more expansive, which is more specific. He's got the most specific of the plans. I think everyone else kind of has something to address that. Or at least, you know, counter that in some way. Although I don't think tonight was really about countering one another. I think that
a little bit. They tried to take some shots at Hillary. I don't think it was terribly effective.
I think everyone tried to take a couple shots from the lower tier to the upper tier. But they
Hillary
also gave
took
each other
shots,
so many. Hillary took the most
Bernie.
Shots, and she received the most shots and took the most shots.
Which
I
you
would
have expected, sure.
But she was in the middle spot. So you're supposed to, you know, that's kind of your spot.
It's part of the gig, yeah.
I thought that really, you know, comparatively to the Republican debate, where
so much
the
more
questions,
substance.
And I mentioned this on the last podcast, you know, the questions were all like mean girls, like,
yeah.
please tell
yeah,
the
this,
other candidate
this one
why.
Tweeted that you're a poopy head.
Yeah, this one tweeted why you're a poopy head. Please respond to the other one why you think they're a poopy head rather than you being the poopy head.
Right.
Please tell one why you are rubber and they are glue.
Yeah, yeah. And it was a lot more substance tonight.
Yeah, and it was more. They still tried to get in on that
media fire, but they
sure, didn't.
Sure, but it was in the context of policy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Rather than just these ad hominem personal attacks. But Rachel, what else you got there? Because you took the most copious notes.
I did. So are we talking about climate change or the next thing that happened?
Well, we were going to get into climate change.
Well, we needed Anderson Cooper here to moderate this podcast.
All right.
Obviously.
We're definitely not talking about climate change next because that was the last thing they talked about. And it was interesting, but it was sort of rushed, I felt like, at the end.
Well, it was all rushed. Well, Anderson Cooper was...
Yeah, it was all rushed.
Climate change got brought up any time that Martin O'Malley was there.
Right.
So
he obviously felt that was his strong point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, so there's probably a reason why I would show up here and there, because he brought it up
basically
every time he had the mic.
Well,
he's
got
the
whole grid is going to be green by 2050, which, you know, LOL, good luck with that. But I like to hear the boldness of at least that plan of action.
You know, if I had heard Bernie Sanders say that, I would say, okay, so if you're going to tax Wall Street to, like, 95% and say, like, we're going to all turn it to a grid and do something
and put
radical and socialist.
Jail all the oil lobbyists?
Yeah,
how are you
going
to get them out of the process?
Yeah.
It sounds
good. If I heard it from him, I'd be like, yeah, okay, that sounds practical. This person's like, no, by 2050 we'll do it just by, like, normal means. We're just going to.
Yeah.
Yeah. That,
good luck with that.
All right, so we're going to weigh in on something that all of us hate. But it was a significant portion of the debate tonight, which is Hillary, Benghazi, foreign policy, and emails. It took up, I don't know, 20, 25 minutes of the debate, which was only, it took up a huge chunk of time. And it didn't seem like it, but really, from my estimation, it took up about 25 minutes of the debate.
Well, yeah.
And it started with talking about...
Well, I think it was Chafee who was actually going to try to ride that wedge, and then Hillary hit it out of the park, and then Bernie had her back, and that was that.
Yeah, I actually, full disclosure, I didn't get home to watch the debate until I got to a certain portion of it, and I had walked in to the House to riotous laughter because Hillary had apparently hit some home run, and I asked what happened. And they, I was told that somebody said, would you like to comment on this? And Hillary said, no.
Oh, that was
so and you guys were laughing, and that was when I walked in the door. So everything up till then was hearsay.
What happened
up till then, I actually saw
talking about what's happened in Syria and what's happening with Russia and sort of like all of those sort of negotiations that have been going on. And I think it's particularly prescient because Hillary Clinton was a Secretary of State. So a lot of questions were asked. Clinton went first.
Yeah.
And basically said that obviously Putin shouldn't bomb Syria. She didn't give a lot of ways how we prevent that, but she definitely said it was unacceptable and that she would prevent that.
And nobody
that
really
from happening.
Did, yeah.
Well, as a secretary,
Sanders
I would expect
said
something
he
there.
Would not get involved in another quagmire like Iraq.
Sure.
And that he would like to support the Syrian rebels but not put boots on ground. Chafee said that the only time first of all, he wanted to point out that he was the only Republican, because he was one at the time, to vote no on the Iraq vote.
Yeah.
And he basically called Hillary unqualified to be president because she voted yes, which was interesting. He said,
harken back to 2008.
Yeah, exactly.
I thought we were past that. Yeah. That's a little desperate, I think.
Yeah, I agree. And then
fair to point out, but we've been there, done that.
What I thought was really cute was Hillary was like, you know, Lincoln, I've debated this about 25 times.
Yeah, yeah.
With Obama back in 2008.
Yeah.
And he won, and then he picked me as Secretary of State. So I guess he thought I knew what I was doing.
She was well
on
prepared.
That issue.
She was
and
well
I was like, booyah, Hillary.
Drop the
mic moments. Like, I was like, yeah.
Yeah, because what can you say back to that?
I mean, right.
She covered that.
I've already covered this, and then he hired me as Secretary of State. So I guess I didn't do so bad on that issue.
One thing I can say to you guys that I haven't had a chance to relay to you yet or run past you for podcast fodder, but I was in an audit this week with a European person with my work. This week, and I spent the last 3 days with them, and they are from Germany, and I
medical
could not
device
believe
audit, by the
way. How much they were very opposed to Syrian refugees entering their country.
That shouldn't surprise
you. It sounded like Dukes of Hazzard. I want to fly the Confederate flag. They shan't cross the border thing. And he was trying to explain to us what they're trying to do to control this is that now the border from any country. So let me state the problem and I'll give an analogy. So what they're saying is that in Germany, they've got so many different borders that they're trying to make it so that the entire border is secured all the way across.
Mm-hmm.
Because it may take 2 or 3 years for people to go all the way around the border of Germany to get in somewhere. But they want to secure the entire border because it might take 1.5 years to loop around, but they might loop around. And so they have been securing all the borders, and so you can't go from Germany to Turkey. You can't go from Germany to – I mean, they're doing it from every way around because –
You actually – with Germany, you actually have to go back before – and I know people who live in Berlin, and the anti-immigrant sentiment, not just towards Syrians, even towards Americans and everybody else, has been brewing for a while there. Because there's parts of big German cities that are almost completely immigrant, which is not a big deal if you've lived in the UK or the United States. I mean, that's just sort of par for the course. But they have been kind of pushing back, and it's unfortunately given a lot of the really crazy right wing over there some ammunition to work with. And, yeah, they are it's a big problem now that they're really pushing back against immigration of all kinds, especially, you know, Syrians at this point.
I mean, Syrians at this point is a big deal. He was talking about how basically their immigration policy had been completely destroyed because they had just recently completely rethought it.
Yeah.
And were letting people through from Turkey and Greece.
Well, there's a good reason for that. You know, the populations of those countries, a lot of these European countries, are declining. They need these people.
It's from Turkey and from Greece into Germany. They were letting people in to do things like engineering studies and enter the universities.
Right.
And they kind of had an open border policy, as they are required to do by EU doctrine.
Yes.
But they had expanded it to the countries outside of the EU, but right on the borders of the EU, to say, like, why don't we let you into the EU? And they were having the fight to say, this is how you get into the EU. Like, you come into Germany, we give you engineering training, we send you mm-hmm. elsewhere. And that was kind of a borderstone of what, or a cornerstone of what they were trying to do. And then the Syrian refugees started showing up, and all of a sudden they were like, fuck Syrians! Well, like, immigrants!
They didn't expect millions at a time. They expected a normal, steady flow.
I do believe that's true, but I also don't think that they are taking it well.
No.
As saying, like, it's the numbers that are the problem, they are absolutely attributing it, at least from my very, very small... A sample group that I got this week.
To xenophobia.
All right, hang on. So there's so many refugees flowing in from these countries that are experiencing such turmoil and murder and rape and torture and other things that some European countries are starting to panic, obviously. And normally they would obviously accept the brilliant engineers from any country and all of that stuff, but there's starting to become some xenophobia in European countries and in American countries. We've started to see some Muslim protests and some crazy stuff just because the turmoil in the Middle East has become so great that there's so many refugees that so many countries have had to take them in mm-hmm. that they're having a hard time. Well, everybody's having a hard time figuring out how to culturally accept that, and there's been some protests.
I would say that that's definitely true, and that's obviously in the news, but I would say, like, what I picked up from, you know, recently interacting with a European who has just come from there, is that it's not just the xenophobia, it's the anger with the other European countries about who is willing to do what for what. Yeah. So, you know, I was speaking with a German this week who was super pissed at the UK because they're willing to take in 20,000 people over 7 years.
Yeah.
And they're willing to take in 7,000 people every day.
Yeah.
Europe. And Germany has been, you know, really...
And poor Greece. Yeah. And Greece is already a cluster, and now they're dealing with all these refugees.
Yeah, and if the UK is allowed to say, we'll do our share, we'll take in 20,000 people over 7 years, and they're talking about 20,000 people a week, like, it's a big fucking difference.
No, it's a huge debate. And they're getting
really angry at each other.
European Union, right? Yeah. So, like, we're all the same. And then Obama came out and said we would accept a certain number, which is, of course, much less
than the UK numbers. It's 27,000 over 10 years, I believe.
No, I think it's 100,000.
Over 10
years.
Yeah.
100,000.
It was still way too small a number, but it was more than the UK.
Yeah, it was more than the UK. But we're a bigger country, too.
But moving on, pivoting back to the debate.
The next thing I wanted to talk about was sticking with foreign policy. Someone asked Bernie Sanders, when you voted against all these things, right? You don't consider yourself a pacifist, but you voted against all the things, and you're very proud of this. So when is war ever a thing? When is it ever a possibility? When do you think it should be a thing?
You know,
and what did he say?
Foreign policy, time and time again, the media and the debate moderators think it's such a big thing, and then when people go to the polls, it's not a big thing.
Yep, that's what we talked about.
It's always with domestic, John McCain, right? Always domestic policy that rules the day.
And what he said was,
and you know what? And moreover, all the people who really, really care about foreign policy are all voting Republican anyway.
Exactly. So who cares?
You know what's interesting is, I also wasn't here for this question, and when I immediately thought when you guys were talking about this, I thought you guys were talking about domestic war. I thought you were talking about, like, at what point do we?
Oh, domestic terrorism, you mean?
No, at what point?
What do we take over Texas and
when we're going to split? When we're going to secede?
Yeah.
Oh, no. That's a different podcast in the GOP debate. Yeah. That's a different podcast. Yeah. Oh, no. So he basically said...
At what point do we start calling these white domestic terrorists, you know, warmongers?
That's not what we're talking about. So what he said was, the times that I voted for war was during the ethnic cleansing in Kosovo.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
To kill Osama bin Laden.
That's not really
and then
war,
in the future, that's what he said. And in the future, only if there is a coalition, but he does not believe that the United States should make a unilateral action ever, which is a pretty bold statement for a presidential candidate to make.
It is. And you know what? It's not really going to hurt him with too many undecided voters if Bernie was the nominee, I don't think. you know, unless there's another big 9/11 type something right before the election, which, you know, the conservatives are hoping will happen. It probably won't.
I guess at this point, I'm wondering, is unilateral now type speak for preemptive?
Yes. So just the United States. We just do whatever we want.
We're not going to
get a
coalition.
The Wolfowitz Doctrine is, yes, you're right.
I mean, there's a difference between unilateral action and preemptive action. At least there once was.
They usually go hand in hand.
There once was.
Once
you're
upon
right.
a time, there you're used right. to be a difference between unilateral action and preemptive action.
Mm-hmm.
Unilateral action would have been, we don't need a coalition. We will act upon our own.
Right. The Bush
preemptive
Doctrine.
Action means...
Wolfowitz Doctrine.
We will act if you look
at us sideways. Yeah, if we think you're a threat.
If you look like you're acting a little wonky, we will go ahead and just straight up blow you up.
Well, that's Jeb Bush's foreign policy team.
Yeah. Well, Paul Wolfowitz. Back in the gang. That's what I'm asking. Are we saying unilateral action or preemptive action? Because unilateral action, I don't think, is necessarily...
The only one that would even entertain anything like that would be Jim Webb, and he's not going to sniff the nomination.
Or Jeb Bush. But he's not a Democrat.
Well, I'm talking just on the Democratic
side. I know.
But moving on from there, because I don't want to waste too much time, because foreign policy is not a big thing.
Okay, just really quick, just to hint on, I'm just going to say, in the next 30 seconds, the other people no one cares about what they had to say. Martin O'Malley said, no one should ever take military action off the table. And then he hit Hillary Clinton really quick with a no-go of weapons of mass destruction. Nobody cares. And then Jim Webb said, I hate the Iran deal, which had nothing to do with what we were talking about. And then that led into Benghazi. So do you want to talk about Benghazi?
Sure, because...
Who doesn't?
Nobody does, but
well,
let's do it anyway.
Hillary and Bernie shut it down and got a big applause from the partisan crowd, and their supporters love it, but it's not going to do anything to dissuade the other side. It's going to keep hammering Benghazi to death, so, you know. Whatever. Hillary had some good lines, and Bernie kind of grabbed the mic and said, enough with the fucking emails. I think almost verbatim, that's what he said, right?
Oh, my God. Okay, can I just say, I just talk about this for a second? Because this was amazing to me. She gave this whole speech about, like, here's what I did. It has been proven again and again. I did nothing wrong. I've been completely transparent. There have been the five, and she, like, cites, like, investigations that have been done. Like, she's being really clear about, like, I did nothing wrong. And then they're like, Mr. Sanders, would you like to respond? And he's like, I know this might not be politically correct, and I know this might be politically damaging, but I'm going to agree with Madam Secretary, and I'm going to say enough with the emails already.
Yeah.
I'm like, enough. I have a quote. Hang on.
This is a smart move, smart political move.
I agree.
And he's been saying it on the stump. I mean, he said that when we went and saw him on Saturday. Like, he said it was stupid that people are carrying this on.
I have the quote. We are sick and tired of talking about your damn emails. It may not be politically correct, but I agree with the secretary. Let's talk about the real issues facing America.
Mm-hmm.
So that may have been staged. I'm sure it'll be framed that way by the press. But I really think, like, even if it was... Everyone is literally sick of the fucking email thing already.
Well, the only thing that clarified is that it's not going to be an issue in the Democratic campaign.
Correct.
Right. But the other side will, of course, keep hammering away as long as they can. So, yeah.
I mean, what that definitely put in there is that this will not be a thing that we – this is not a hill that we die on.
Right. Right, right.
If you want to bring it to us, you're going to have to face an entire group of people – who have been hearing for months and months and months on the primary stage that this is not an issue.
Right.
And it'll be a thing that, you know, divides families on Thanksgiving, but does not actually fucking deal.
Mine and
well,
Rachel's
and this will be, yes, this will be what kills Lincoln Chafee, right? Because he said, after Bernie Sanders said that, which led to massive Chafee's applause and massive everything. I know he's already dead. He's just killed himself. So let's read why.
Yeah.
He said, Hillary Clinton's email are a huge issue.
Yeah.
We need repair of American credibility after the weapons of mass destruction incident.
Okay. So,
and something about Hussein and how he had weapons of mass destruction.
Like, he was a Republican.
Yeah. And so because Clinton didn't do the thing, then she's hurting the credibility of Democrats, and therefore something about how she should be bad, and so he's mad. This is after Bernie just was like, fuck it, let's talk about... He literally said, enough of the emails. Let's talk about the real issues facing America. And they were like, hello, Chafee. And he was like, I think this is a huge issue. And we should repair American credibility and something about
Hussein.
Can
we all agree that
everybody, he's done. Look, he's out. He's out.
There's
right?
a good reason that Chafee and Webb don't draw flies in terms of support. They're awful candidates.
Yes.
They really are.
Well, yes. I mean, if we can be totally honest, Webb is not really a Democrat.
He didn't start as one,
Well, he's still not now. He doesn't believe in 85% of the basic principles that would really define the Democratic Party now. Maybe the Blue Dog Democrats when they still had Blue Dog. But
no, yeah, I remember.
He'd be a Blue Dog, maybe, but they've been run out.
I actually thought he might be Obama's running mate in 2008 to protect his foreign policy flank, but they realized they calculated correctly that foreign policy is just not that big a deal. And Biden would be a much better VP candidate.
Yeah, and I mean, like, the Blue Dogs just aren't really holding that much anymore.
There are no more Blue Dog. It's all Republican, or, you know, it's become...
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think there's Blue Dogs. I don't think there's that many moderate Republicans anymore. I mean, there's a few, but...
He's betting his entire thing on a thing that's...
That's gone.
Not a deal anymore.
Well,
and,
right, and more, and more towards...
Chafee is basically, I don't know, weird.
Lincoln Chafee had some awful
baby. I don't know what the fuck he is. He is a weirdo. I don't know what he says. I don't know what point he's getting
I was
to.
Disappointed
no, no
that he didn't mention
to...
the metric system tonight.
No offense.
I was hoping that he would come because the metric system does make sense, I think.
Yeah, Dana would be the biggest proponent of that, right?
Again,
metric
not,
system?
Not to bring up the German guy again, but we had an entire talk for like 2 hours about how he can't
system?
Understand our... files at our work because we don't use the metric system, and he just looks forward to like 10 years from now when the Democrats take over in America because we'll finally
under
have
President
a metric
Chafee?
System.
Okay,
under
good.
President
but he didn't say Chafee specifically.
No, he's not following
he
close enough, but
did
you tell him that we have a candidate that's for changing the metric
I
system?
I didn't. I just kind of chuckled to myself that I have something to talk about for the podcast.
All right, I'm pivoting at this point. I'm going to pivot at this point. We're going to talk about the next issue, which really was race.
When Don Lemon's mic was sabotaged?
I don't know. Bernie Sanders was specifically asked about the Black Lives Matter movement because that's something that's been brought up for him.
Yeah,
and
he stumbled on that.
Mm-hmm. No, not at all.
Well, no,
stop.
I mean earlier. Yeah.
All right.
Oh,
stop.
I was gonna say, tonight he fucking owned it. Sorry. Didn't mean to step on your toes.
So when Bernie Sanders was originally asked about the Black Lives Matter movement, he stumbled a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And tonight he was asked about it specifically. And he was the only person who used the phrase institutional racism of all the candidates. I made really sure that I paid attention to that. He also talked about Sandra Bland. He brought up specific members of people that have been affected by police brutality and police injustice and death, frankly. He talked about the criminal justice movement.
The answer to the question was... Black Lives Matter.
Well, right.
He's actually not the only person that said Black Lives Matter.
He's not the only person who said it. He's the only person who said it unquestioningly.
Anyway, so O'Malley, or Sanders specifically talked about Sandra Bland and specifically said institutional racism. He talked about the criminal justice system. He was the first person who was interviewed, and so I made... specific care to pay attention to who else addressed it. He did talk about how more people were jailed in the United States than China.
Mm-hmm.
O'Malley was next. He talked about undervalued Black lives and people of color. He specifically said Black Lives Matter. He was one of those. He also said something interesting, which was if we buried white young men at the same rate that we buried Black young men, there would be protests in the streets, which there are.
You know, that
but
was...
But they
that was
might matter more.
It was an interesting and effective line. It reminded me of Matthew McConaughey's speech in A Time to Kill, at the end of the movie.
Yeah.
But I don't think it... Again, it was just delivered in this sort of weird way that I don't know if it'll have the effect it should have.
I agree.
Yeah, but it was a good line.
I hear what he's saying, but I don't know
it
that
was
it
a good,
matters.
It was a good, bold line.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Clinton didn't specifically say either of the lives matter. She really defended the Obama administration, which I think is fine. You know, he's the only president to have gone to a federal prison. She called him
to
amoral.
To visit.
Uh-huh. Correct. Sorry. Obviously. Yeah. He visited one. She called him a moral leader. And then she talked about some bureaucratic stuff and tackling criminal justice. And she didn't really answer or address specific issues. But, yeah. You know, I think the Clintons have a lot of credit in the black community in terms of criminal justice.
We've talked about this before, yeah, that African-Americans trust the Clinton name, despite the fact that the crime bill and some of the drug laws that did disproportionately hurt a lot of African-Americans. On the whole, they trust that the Clintons have been on their side for many, many years.
Right. I agree. Yeah.
One thing that I thought, listening to that particular section, is that the only person that I thought really, and like I said, you guys are going to listen to this objectionably, and I'm going to listen to it cheerleaderly. Cheerleaderly? I don't know.
Oh, my.
Like, as a cheerleader.
As a Bernie cheerleader.
he's the only one that I felt, like, just jumped straight on the, like, actual answer to the question. Do all lives matter? Do all black lives matter? And he's the only one who said, just straight up, like, all black lives matter.
Well, he's the one that most had to.
Yeah.
Because he had put himself in a hole when he did not respond well when he was ambushed at campaign events.
I think that's the cynical point of view. I think that...
Well, it's cynical or not, I think it's what had to be done.
I think that what has happened is that he, despite being the, 70-something-year-old person on the campaign trail, mm-hmm. Seems out of touch with everything because he's so fucking old and doesn't know what he's talking about and often rubs his ears and goes like, say what? And like, he does all the, things that make him look like an old person.
He did that a few times tonight, yeah.
He didn't hear Cooper. I make him cringe, but when somebody's like, do black lives matter? And he's like, fuck yeah, black lives matter over he knows the talking points. He seems like he has his finger on the trail.
And on the subject.
He has his finger on the pulse of what's actually happening.
Jim Webb,
not like what somebody who is a campaign reporter told him, like, do you not know what's going on here? I mean, I think Hillary does that too, to a certain degree, but she doesn't just jump in, full feet first and say, like, here's who I need to have be my supporters.
Because she's already got that wrapped up.
Because she's already got her certain people wrapped up.
She doesn't want to go too far. There's no reason for her.
She's got too much to lose. Yeah. Bernie, on the other hand, can be like, listen, man, if somebody wants me to say, like, that shit's on fleek, I'll say that shit's on fleek.
Then Jim Webb's answer was, like, what your conservative dad would say. Exactly. Well, what's wrong with saying all lives matter?
Yeah.
It's because it's cheapening the original message and trying to undercut it.
Like, at least Bernie gets what the message is. Hillary gets what the message is, but she's been told what she needs to message by.
Sure. She's already got the flank covered with African-American voters.
But he's been told enough times that he gets what the point is. And despite the fact that he's an old-as-fuck man, he's probably one of the more groovy, on-point, finger-on-the-pulse.
But you know what? He's also learned that African-Americans, most of them probably are not that familiar with his civil rights record.
Yeah. Well, and we've touched on that before. I think that a lot of the things that he said before is, he's wanted to say, shouldn't everyone know what I stand for?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I really, I'm Bernie Sanders, for Christ's sake. Like, don't you know?
don't you know who I am?
Don't you know that I'm on your
and
side?
And like, no.
And they're like, no.
You're some obscure senator from Vermont. Yeah.
And you've got really weird white-ass hair. You're some Jewish dude from the Upper East Coast. Like, yeah. I don't know who the fuck you are.
Yeah, yeah.
And but if he you sees, were familiar he, with his policies, then you should...
We'll see if he's got enough time to mend those fences. But we'll see. I mean, the Clintons have a lot of years invested of African-Americans knowing exactly who they are, for better or for worse.
And correct.
Bernie does not have a lot of time to change minds and build those bridges, but he's at least going in the right direction now.
So we were talking about Bernie Sanders. The next topic that came up was income inequality. And of course, Bernie Sanders was the first to come up. Mm-hmm. The first thing he talked about, because his question was sort of about the recession and all that stuff, he basically said Bush sucks. And that when Bush left office, he was losing 800,000 jobs a month.
Right, which Republicans like to pretend it all started when Obama took over,
exactly.
The economic slide.
Exactly. And then he was, you know, are we better off today? Blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he made some good points. You know, he also pointed out that in the way that you and I were talking, like, you know, we're all not Obama's magic, you mm-hmm. know.
Yeah, we can disagree with him
on
plenty of stuff.
In the last 4 years, the middle class it's better. It's not great. You know, he talked about raising the minimum wage and pay equity and creating jobs and infrastructure and mm-hmm. that kind of stuff.
His core message. He got that across.
Yeah, exactly. And sort of what we were talking about like, the unemployment rate, maybe it isn't accurate, but it still has improved, that kind of stuff. But he's not trying to be Obama's cheerleader on this one.
No, none of them really were. They drew a fine line, I think, all of them.
They did. And he makes some pretty extreme points. Free college and, you know, a lot of that stuff.
Right, and Hillary was less willing to go all in on that idea.
Right. Yeah. And then Anderson Cooper asked Hillary kind of an asshole question, I'm going to say.
Which one was
he
that?
He said, you know, Bernie's all for this, you know, kind of populist policy. But you and Bill Clinton are a part of the 1%, so how do you have anything to relate to this? And I just thought, what are you talking
about?
Isn't
everybody on stage part of the 1%? I mean, everybody.
Well, she just said to him, yeah, we are right now. And both of us came from fucking poverty. Like, mm-hmm. Bill Clinton came from a single-parent alcoholic asshole in Arkansas. And Hillary came from a very middle-class family. Like, these people did not – they're not Mitt Romney's. They're not Bush's. They came from really not those people. And she really nailed Anderson Cooper on that. She was like, yeah – we are both really blessed to mm-hmm. be part of that, but that is not where we came from. And he looked a little embarrassed, and he should have, because he asked her that question as though she was Donald Trump.
I want to say that there are two facets to that question. One is that he should be embarrassed to ask that question because she, and I mean, they both came from humbler roots, but they sure as fuck didn't come from the humblest roots. So her answer also did not really give...
Well, Bill Clinton did.
Well,
Bill's a little more than
Hillary. Bill Clinton did.
Hillary was more...
impoverished, alcoholic parents. Yes. So,
Hillary
he
was
did.
A little more upper middle class.
Yeah, the Rodhams are not known for their poverty, but...
They're no Trumps.
No, they're no Trumps, obviously. And
or Romneys or
no,
Rockefellers.
No,
I'm just saying, like, if we're trying to say that her turn up to princess story is something that she wants to say every American should be able to achieve, it's gonna take a little bit more than her.
All
she
was
saying
was like, hey, I didn't come from Trump. Because he was like, oh, you're 1%. What do you know about middle class? And she was like, I did not come from this.
No. His attack on her is completely unfounded.
Yeah. That's all I'm trying to say.
Her defense of her upbringing is also completely unfounded.
No, he literally said, what would you know about coming from that? You guys are 1%.
I just said his attack on her was unfounded, but also her saying, like, I came from, like, the humblest of upbringings.
They all
I
do
was
that.
Born
that's
a,
obnoxious.
I was born a poor black child on the Delta River.
Well, even the Romneys, remember, like, last year, back in 2012 when the Romneys were like, we were so poor we had to eat tuna fish sandwiches.
Right. Yeah. I mean...
Yeah.
I was born a poor black child. This doesn't fucking quite work for the Rodhams, but...
Or the Romneys.
None of them really come from the worst of upbringing.
Well, real quick, what did we think about Anderson Cooper? You know, I thought... I liked that he got in a lot of substantive questions. He also had some that sounded like they were just crafted by Fox News assholes. And he was also a little pushy and not letting... candidates expand.
So Dana and I are
going to
disagree on this. So Dana, go ahead.
Oh, I would say that I think that it was significantly better than the Republican debate where it was...
Oh, well,
like
sure. That was
before,
hosted by Fox.
It was the Mean Girls debate where it was said, like, you know, hey, Mr. Trump, Jeb Bush said this mean, said you were a duty head. What do you think about that?
Where Megyn Kelly was the only one that asked decent questions, so she got suspended for
her. Please tell
Colley
Farina why Mr. Trump is wrong, why he thinks you're a duty head. And they just tried to make it as, you know, sensationalist as possible.
Because the reality show guy was there. You might as well make it a reality show.
Exactly. I mean, I'm pretty sure Trump Ministries probably sponsored that actual debate. But, you know, this actually seemed to have some substance to it.
And I'll get to that when we wrap up, but I totally agree. I think there was a lot of substance tonight.
Can I chime in on this?
Absolutely.
I actually, you know, as much as I liked how different the debate was from the Republican debate in terms of, like, hey, you, respond to him, and hey, you, respond to him, I actually really didn't love how little time some of the candidates were given. I felt like, you know, even the minor ones, and I know that we all can debase them and say, like, it doesn't matter. But I think it does matter.
You mean tonight
tonight specifically. That some of the candidates tonight were asked a specific question and were given 15 seconds to answer. And in the first 5 seconds, they were like, thank you, Governor. Thank you, Governor. Thank you, Governor.
That's
I really thought that, like, you know, I know that Bernie and Hillary were given a little more time because they're our front runners, but there were some questions that I specifically wanted to hear the answer to from some of the other candidates.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that Jim Webb was a fucking whiny baby asshole about, like, I want to spend my time talking about how I don't get time to talk is obnoxious.
Yeah.
But there were times when Chafee or O'Malley were talking that it was like, you literally got halfway through one sentence, and that's a reasonable sentence, and they're cut off. And I'm like, no, this is a debate.
Right.
So fuck your rules. Let him finish his sentence, because if this is a serious debate, I'd like to hear the end of that sentence.
And,
and I'd like to hear him say the rest of what he had to say without someone being like, you know, the rules are that actually 4 seconds ago, you're supposed to stop talking, and I'm supposed to politely disregard you, and then I'm supposed to a little less politely disregard you, and then I'm supposed to completely, like, if you're going to give Hillary Clinton a minute and a half or 2 minutes, I want you to do that. But if he's in the middle of saying something substantive, stop fucking talking and let him talk.
Yeah.
And then readjust the time of the debate if you need to. But I don't think it's important to let Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton say some stump speech stuff and cut Martin O'Malley off at halfway through a sentence.
I agree. And I think that's, you know, Anderson Cooper, that was kind of a screw up. Like, yeah, if somebody's rambling or dominating time, you got to take control. But if somebody's in the middle of a substantive answer to the question you just asked, you got to
let
them
finish.
Shut the
fuck up. Yeah.
No, I think that's true. But I also have it in good authority that McAfee offered the
McAfee?
Job. Yeah, McAfee.
Who's McAfee?
McAfee.
Who's McAfee?
McAfee.
What's going on?
Lincoln McAfee?
McAfee?
Right?
McCavity from...
Sorry, am I pronouncing it wrong? McAfee? Seems like a perfectly way...
Sorry.
There's a light outside our house. There's a...
Pause.
I know. I just have on good authority that
Lincoln Chafee.
Yeah, I don't know.
You have on good authority that Lincoln Chafee.
It's gone now. There was a joke there. I was gonna say that, like, Chafee offered it to Webb. Never mind.
Well, to your point, Rachel, I don't think it would have done Jim Webb any favors to have more time to say ridiculous, horrifying things. So
no, not to Webb. Not to Webb, certainly.
Oh no, that was the joke. That was that. Chafee offered it to Webb that if he just took up more time, that he would get the...
Get the prize?
No, he would get the...
Airtime?
It's a terrible fucking... Don't worry about it.
So what's next, Rach?
Delete this entire show.
Yeah, I'll take care of it in post.
All right, so the next thing you talked about was income inequality. And of course, they went to Sanders first.
Yeah.
And they talked about how Bush sucks. Well, he did, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then he did the thing that Al Gore didn't do, which I love.
He did a lot of things Al Gore didn't do.
Yeah, but...
Like run a campaign.
The one thing he didn't do that we were talking about the other night was, are you better off today? Right?
Yeah.
He did the thing. He didn't run from Obama.
Right.
He said, hey, you know, Bush sucked. When Obama started here, we were losing 800,000 jobs a month.
Mm-hmm.
And now we aren't, and mm-hmm. we're better off today. And then he talked statistics. The last 40 years, the middle class has disappeared.
Yes.
You know, we need to raise the minimum wage. We need to pay equity. We need to create jobs, infrastructure, free college, that kind of stuff. And then they pivoted to Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
And he was an asshole. I think they hate the Clintons at CNN, but that's doesn't? When he sort of brought up the like 1% and
yeah,
blah,
that,
blah, blah.
That was a ridiculous line. All these people are rich.
Yeah, exactly. And so
yeah,
she
that was,
so
that was
but
so unfair.
To be fair, she was like, "I have a 5-point plan," and totally did not explain it. She just said like. The economy, she made this very impassioned argument, which I totally agree with, but does not help her specific campaign. She mm-hmm. just said basically like, the economy is always better with a Democrat than a Republican. And look at the two sides, and they don't have real answers, and we do, and our side is better. But she didn't really make an argument for herself. She just sort of said like, I have a 5-point plan, and also remember, vote Democrat.
Which
and
is
like,
exactly...
Is that... Is, are you, what is happening?
It's, it makes perfect sense when you're the front runner of your party.
But she doesn't realize she's barely the front runner.
And she's not barely the front runner.
And, well, not only that, but I noticed my notes on the end, and we'll definitely get to that later, but mm-hmm. just because it got touched, one of my notes was she gave a front runner speech on the back end, meaning like, vote Democrat. Doesn't matter if I'm not the actual nominee, like, even if I'm the back runner. Like, she gave a front runner speech and a back runner speech. Like,
sort of, but she doesn't, she knows she's smart enough not to alienate Sanders supporters.
Well, yeah, I agree with that, but I mean, she gave a Clinton is the best speech 3 times, and then, like, right at the end, she just gave us, like, tail flippers, like, oh, and also, don't forget to vote Democrat.
And then that makes sense to me.
Well, and this is in the middle, so... Then O'Malley gives his speech, right? And he basically says, again, I'm going to say about O'Malley, this is going to raise his ranking in the votes. I just think it is. He says about income inequality, well, you guys have talked about it. We did it in Maryland
mm-hmm.
yet again. And he says, you know, in Maryland, we passed all of these sort of policies and plans. He kind of trashes Hillary a little bit and says, like, everything Bernie says is great, which I'm not sure is sort of his, like, nod to, hey, I should be your vice president or I hate Hillary or whatever that's about. But, yeah, he talks about Glass-Steagall, like, in this section a whole shit ton. And Dana noticed it, I think, a whole bunch.
Yeah, you know, like I said, I walked into this debate a little bit, and I kind of walked in right when he started saying Glass-Steagall, and mm-hmm. I think he said it about, I don't know, 88 beats per
which
minute.
Which is kind of dumb, because most Americans have no idea what he's talking
about. Yeah, they don't even know what Glass-Steagall is, so
he,
it's not a good point.
He almost asked for extra time just to tell people what Glass-Steagall was, and Anderson Cooper almost gave it to him.
Yeah.
And then Anderson Cooper started explaining it to him, to the American people, and he gave, like, the absolute worst... possible explanation.
I don't know
of what it was.
He did
he was
say.
Like, do you remember in 1998 that thing that y'all didn't really remember what it was?
No.
Yeah.
He, what, like, well, I will tell you. I disagree. I'm going to disagree with you on
really
this.
Shitty explanation.
He said, "No, I have notes." He said, "15% of the GDP was with Wall Street in '98, and at this point, 60% is." And because of Glass-Steagall, which he and Bernie both voted for, and Hillary Clinton voted against. That he's saying that's the reason. So from 15 to 60% is 45% difference. And I think he's trying to point out, like, maybe people don't know what Glass-Steagall is.
No, honey.
But at least, like, the 45% difference there people can sort of note. Yeah?
Okay. No, you are absolutely right, and that is an exact quote of what happened. What I'm saying is what Anderson Cooper took that
no,
little, like,
you.
5-second sliver of time to say... Like, I've got this little tiny note card that says maybe people, they don't know what it was, and they showed him, and he said, like, in case people don't know what Glass-Steagall is, it's the thing that did the thing that made things weird. And, like, he didn't explain it at all, and then that came right after that. So it was like, if you didn't know what it was to begin with, like, that was all really great extra information if you had the baseline information, But if you had no idea...
It didn't help, yeah.
Anderson Cooper's fucking explanation would be like, let's take a second from the debate to explain to the common person what it is.
Well, was that the point where O'Malley was ribbing Hillary on... Glass-Steagall or whatever, and then Hillary said, yeah, and by the way, thanks for supporting me in 2008.
It was right before that.
Yeah, so actually, that's exactly what she said. She said...
she was well-prepared tonight.
She did. She said, like, I understand his complaints, and I have different opinions now, but I do remember that Martin O'Malley supported me in 2008, so mm-hmm. I really
endorsed
appreciate
her,
that. Yeah, endorsed me. Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, you get Webb. And that sort of erases a lot of that because he's just a sort of blanket capitalist. Like, no, yeah. All of that's fine. Profit taxes are good. You know, we don't want people to not have compensation. And I'm really whiny about how time was wasted. And it's just very, like, his opinion was just sort of like, do you want to just go join the Republican Party again? Or do you want to be here right now? Because I feel like you don't feel in place right now.
And that was about the time where Link Chafee, who was really grossly unprepared to defend undoing Glass-Steagall.
This is exactly right. Yes.
Yeah,
in
where
my notes.
He yeah. said twice, he yeah. said, oh, come on, let go easy on me. I don't know if he was making a joke at first because he's like, well, my dad just died. I just got to the Senate. I didn't know what I was doing. And Anderson Cooper said, wait, are you saying you didn't know what you were voting for? And he's kind of like, well, my dad just died
he
and
goes,
I just got to the
it
Senate.
Was, it was 92-5. What do you want me to do? My dad just died and I had just arrived and I was just appointed by the governor. It was 92-5. And Anderson Cooper literally was like, so you literally just voted for something you had no idea what it was? And he's like, my dad just died and I just got appointed. Like, he didn't even say, like, and then I read it. And in retrospect, no, he was just literally like, yeah. No, I had nothing. I had no idea what I was doing. Everyone told me to do because yeah. why? I get that. But you don't, like, say it out loud?
Not
you know
not
I mean?
If you're a major party presidential candidate that you want people to take seriously.
If you're like a state house councilman, little mayor.
Not even.
No,
that
say
was
that
was
loud.
Middle school student council yeah. debate yeah. level of F up right there.
It was.
It was embarrassing.
It was. Okay. The next thing that was brought up was Dana Bash. I'm sorry, Dana Bash.
Who got in two whole questions. Why was she even there?
Okay. So that's the question I was going to ask you. I missed only like maybe 6 minutes of the debate, but I don't think she got to speak before now. Is that true? Anderson Cooper really like dominated the debate.
I guess that was the plan, obviously. But yeah, she only got in like two or three questions at the most.
Yeah. So an hour and 38 minutes into the debate, she asked about free college tuition for everyone or... Mm-hmm. for non-rich kids, which is sort of the difference between the Bernie Sanders campaign and the Hillary campaign.
Mm-hmm.
So both of them would like to have free tuition for public universities for kids.
Which we like because everybody in this room right now with their college degrees
has
as much student debt as the GDP of some African countries.
Yeah, exactly correct. Yes.
No, I'm not really
and so,
that interested in...
no one can hear you.
Not really that interested in new... debt. I'd like to see what they'd have to say about debt forgiveness, and I haven't seen anything really great about that.
No.
All right, well, I'm really interested in not saddling kids with this in the future.
No.
I
don't
want
a whole generation in debt to the government.
I'd also love to see my debt, but I've already paid my promissory notes, so I'm sort of invested
yep.
on
yeah,
that.
We're
all right, so Bernie said, Dana Bash asked, Why offer free college for rich kids, basically? So everyone sort of decided that free college for kids is a thing. But
mm-hmm.
Bernie and Hillary disagree on the idea that rich kids should pay and poor kids should not. And so Bernie's argument was, look, it's like high school.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't ask the parents of rich kids to pay for high school or junior high or middle school or elementary school. It should be a free thing for everyone. And so
mm-hmm.
that's his position. Hillary's position is sort of, I'm not going to give college tuition for free to people who can pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about that?
How do I feel about
yeah.
it?
Yeah. I mean, that's their positions. That's exactly what they said at the debate. And it's a really interesting debate.
If we took seriously the economic well-being of the upcoming generations and we actually wanted a middle class, then that's something we would absolutely have to figure out a way to do.
But do you think it's for everyone, including people of rich parents, or only people whose parents are below a certain poverty line?
Well, we can get more nuanced. Are we talking about big public state universities? I mean,
public universities specifically.
The rich kids can, rich parents can still send their kids to Wharton and the Ivies and whoever else.
And then are we creating a new class of, well, yeah, we all graduated from college, but my parents couldn't afford me to send me to the good college, so now we still have a class system.
It's a much bigger problem than kids not being able to sniff college whatsoever.
I think it's Bernie. I think Bernie for me is like, look, everybody gets to go to school for free. So there is no, you know, certainly there are academic standards that allow you into better schools.
Sure.
Or athletic standards or theater standards or music standards or
scholarships.
Scholarships. But there's not financial standards that prohibit really talented kids or untalented kids or any kids from getting into college.
Mm-hmm.
And that therefore sort of levels the playing field.
Well, most developed European nations have free college, basically.
Exactly.
But they still have private schools you can go to if you can afford
to. Sure.
I don't think that should be eliminated.
No, of course. And we will still have those, and sure.
Yeah.
But for all the kids like me, you, Dana, all the people that I know that didn't get into Harvard or Yale, but are super smart kids, I would rather have people get a college education and not end up with $30,000 to $70,000 in debt.
There's plenty of brilliant scientists and great thinkers and influential people who got their undergrad at big state universities like Penn State or Ohio State.
Yeah, but all
of
them ended up with a bunch of debt, and I don't want that to happen.
Well, I agree. But I'm much less worried about, if we make public school tuition free and then the rich kids can go to the private schools where they get better educations. You know what? We'll cross that bridge when we get to it. Let's get everybody who has the grades and wants to go to college.
I'm 100% in agreement with you on this. 100%. If I went to that state school, I had great grades. I was a good student.
I'm still in a ton of debt.
Yeah, exactly. And I am not doing the thing that my college, technically.
But that's
a
whole other story,
right?
It
helps.
I mean, we would if we could find good paying jobs in the field we studied
exactly.
for.
Exactly. And then we have Dana. Would you like to chime in really quick? No. Okay. So, publicly funded universities, because it has become a thing that is just like a high school diploma,
mm-hmm.
is a necessity that we pay for as a society, because
it helps the whole economy, right?
Well, exactly. Do we want to have an educated economy?
No, we want a service class to fight over getting $10 an hour so they can afford to.
But we want innovation and excellence and exceptionalism, and we're the best, except we can't afford to educate our class.
Well,
of students,
I've got news for you, all you patriotic Americans who always talk about all this stuff. I was just at UT Houston with some of the most advanced medical and scientific research, and guess what? All the best upcoming statisticians and researchers are all from China and India.
Correct.
And, you know, because guess what? They can get an education over there.
For free.
Yeah.
They pay for it. So my husband, Dana, was a chemical and biological engineer at CSU, and about 70% of his class were transports from places like Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates, because they would be sent to America to get their degree. That was completely paid for.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would be sent back to the country of origin and have a job already in place.
Mm-hmm.
And so...
So they can work for those big companies,
correct,
that are booming,
so
their economy.
For them, it was so super worth it to get that degree.
Mm-hmm.
For someone like us, we don't have any sort of guarantee or placement or anything else. We're just sort of promised...
You're on your own.
Promise, like, I promise if you get a degree, it'll be okay. And it's not okay.
No.
Even if you get your master's, as you can attest, it's never okay.
As someone who graduated cum laude, honors with their undergrad and their master's, and is currently, quote, between jobs, yes.
Yeah, exactly.
I can tell you it doesn't necessarily work out that way, but I still have that mountain of debt.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, I was told, I was promised from the time that I was, like, I don't even know, like second grade, you just have to go to college and then you'll be fine. And I did that.
Yeah.
And then
a different career
field. I went liberal arts and I went political science.
Mm-hmm.
And then they were like, yeah, political science is really good as long as you get your law degree. And that's another $250,000 and you're definitely going to get a divorce, but it'll definitely be worth it then. And I went, fuck yourself. I'm done with this. I'm done. No, thank you.
Yeah.
And so I quit and all I right. just started my own business. But, you know, that's also not easy. It's we're all lied to, essentially. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm saying.
But it's still, yeah. still it's much better to have a degree than not. And then when I talk to my conservative friends who are like, instead of really addressing college tuition and everything, they've come up with this mantra, well, college just isn't for everyone. And I'm like, okay, so you're not going to send your kid to college?
So look at the rates of people who didn't graduate from high school, and mm-hmm. let's talk about how much money they make, and let's talk about how you don't want to put them on a social welfare system. If we're not going to raise the minimum wage, and we would like people who aren't meant for college to not go to college, then we have to pay them more than $7.25 an hour nope. because it's nope. not a living wage.
Nope.
But we can't do that because then nope. corporations might make a little bit less money.
Right.
So
and then they'll use that as an excuse to downsize.
Find me the place where that makes sense. You're not meant to go to college because you're not smart enough or whatever it is we've decided
enough.
You're not.
You're not rich enough.
And we're not going to pay for you. And we're not going to raise the minimum wage. And you don't get welfare.
No.
And you don't get an abortion.
And no health care.
And you have to have kids. And so where the fuck are people supposed to live in this world?
They're supposed to die. That's apparently. The GOP plan.
But they're pro-life. Pro-life?
No, they're pro-fetus.
Pro-fetus.
Once the fetus is born.
You're fucked. Like George Carlin says, right?
Right. And speaking of which, we did not get into, you know, funny, because we've had these big Planned Parenthood hearings on Capitol Hill. And we've had this Kim Davis that CNN seems to love putting her face all over the screen. Mm-hmm. And yet not one question on reproductive rights. Not one question on LGBT rights.
No, interesting, not a single one.
And maybe they're saving that for the second debate. Maybe that's going to be on the agenda.
I think that's
but I thought
bullshit.
That would have come up. At least at some point tonight. And I know that Hillary...
They all agree, so what the fuck's the point?
Hillary
Why not
worked,
say something?
Well, they all agree on a lot of stuff, but they have different actual ways of going about it and specific ways of addressing it.
Is it because it's on CNN that they're like, well, what if the old people are watching and we still have a chance with those moderates, which don't exist?
No.
Is that what they're doing?
No.
What are they doing? No. What are they doing?
Even Fox asked.
I know. I know.
So I'm
We're
really
having
surprised.
A war on women, and in the first Democratic debate, we didn't address women.
We didn't address abortion rights,
no.
contraceptive.
Nothing.
What's going on
There's
at Capitol
There's a woman
Hill.
On stage, I guess.
Well,
that's enough?
Well,
what?
No, well, she had to actually work it in.
Yeah, and she times. Did.
Yeah, and she did.
But seriously, and, we are the party of women and minorities, and we didn't address them at any point during
rights.
The first debate. Yeah, so...
And the recently out of the closet gay moderator didn't
right,
ask
at
one
all,
single question.
Anything.
Maybe he didn't get to it because Jib Webb was complaining too much and that was his quote.
Like, it makes me so mad. Like, seriously, we are the party of women, minorities, gay voters, all the things. And none of that was fucking addressed.
Yeah.
Not a single
And it's been timely,
time.
Right? I mean,
yes.
With the Pope having just come into town and all the Kim Davis shit and the Planned Parenthood kangaroo court.
Well, and then there was the new Planned Parenthood thing recently that they have... For some reason.
Just
and
today, they've decided that they're not going to recoup the fetal tissue donation money.
I would say stop selling, but they never have. So they basically said, look, if this is going to be a fucking issue, we're just going to stop accepting shipping payment for shipping fetal tissue to doctors and researchers.
But we'll still do it because it's
important
for science.
We're still going to ship it to
but
them.
But here, we won't
we're
take a dime.
We're just going to not accept payment for the shipment.
We'll take a loss. Yeah.
That makes us look bad, apparently, and then that makes you look worse, in my opinion. But
yeah, it does, because then you're admitting that
you were doing something
wrong according to somebody.
Yeah, which is just please don't do that. But they did it anyway today, and so now Planned Parenthood is no longer accepting shipping fees for fetal tissues to scientific laboratories, which is then going to cut into other funds that they have. So
no,
I guess
they'll make
let's
it
start
up
a fucking
yeah.
Go payment campaign where we fund fucking shipping fetal so we can have vaccines.
So
I like that. Do you
so,
like hey?
I like
do you
vaccines.
Like I like vaccines.
And so doctors like Ben Carson can do their research.
Do I like vaccines? Because I do.
Rand Paul's on the fence.
You do? I do. Hey, yeah. Listeners out there, if you guys like vaccines. And, like, cures to polio and other
At least they didn't ask that
terrible
stupid question.
Things. Would you mind just going to Planned Parenthood and making a donation because the fuckheads in the world made it so they can't recoup their shipping expenses for fetal
tissues. And if you
want to
cure things like MS and diabetes and cerebral palsy. And
if you could just go make a quick donation, I'd really appreciate it.
Well, at least they didn't ask that stupid question like, should you vaccinate your kids or, you know, just expose everybody to measles because we're in the year 2015.
Oh, my God.
We'll save that for the Republicans.
Yeah, we'll save that's a debate we're going to have. Well, it's not a debate. It's just a conversation.
We've been going on here. And before I give my closing thoughts, any other specifics you guys want to chime in on?
All right. Let me just check my notes really quick.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Here's our closing. Here are the things that the closing question, right, from Anderson Cooper from the debate was,
mm-hmm.
Who are the enemies you've made, right? The biggest enemies.
Weird
you've made.
Question, but okay. No, who's your favorite enemy? Was your enemy. I don't know.
Yes.
Something.
So it was
weird.
An FDR quote. The enemies I have made are those which I am the most proud of.
Right.
And so then he asked, which are your greatest enemies? Chafee said the coal lobby.
Okay.
Hillary said drugs, Republicans, and
drugs.
Insurance.
She didn't say drugs.
Drug lobby.
Drug lobby. Right. Drug lobby.
I thought she was doing a Nancy Reagan thing.
No, drug
lobby. I have war on drugs. They hate me.
Drug lobby, Republicans, and the insurance lobby. Bernie said Wall Street and Big Pharma.
Okay. All good answers so far.
O'Malley said
midgets. I didn't understand that at all.
New American immigrants? I don't really understand what that means. And then Webb.
No, you're reading from another section. That would be awful. who's your most proud of?
I'm reading Dana's notes. I'm sorry. I had to pee. All right. What is this? O'Malley, New American Immigrants. What is this?
No, that's when he was saying that the GOP is vilifying New American Immigrants in their debate.
This just says Webb, da fuck. So what did he say?
The Webb, you were out of the room. That question came up, and Webb kind of smirked and had this creepy laugh. And he said it was the guy that threw a grenade at me in Vietnam.
Oh, that. Yeah, yeah,
but
yeah,
then
yeah.
Then I shot him and he's dead now.
Ugh,
and
for
dead.
For fuck's sake.
War.
For fuck's sake.
Terrible notes.
Those are terrible notes. You're never a note.
But that's what Webb. That's what Webb said. And then I think Hillary kind of creepily laughed because probably out of nervousness.
Yeah, of course. Of
it's
course.
Like, Jesus Christ, you're nuts, Webb.
All right. So just really quick before we get done, future things. Who, what? Who, what after this? Who's out? Webb's out. I think Chafee's out.
Oh, yeah. Well, they were going to, you know, it was inevitable anyway.
I think O'Malley's numbers are going to rise.
I don't think they're going to rise significantly enough to matter.
I do.
We'll see. I think he definitely helped himself tonight in one way or another.
He's the non-Hillary, non-socialist option that is he's going to see his numbers rise in like the 10 to 15% in the next month.
Nope.
All right, you can disagree with me.
O'Malley is
all y'all's
at,
black bitches. But you are
like
going
to
see
1%
his
now.
The vice president of whoever gets it.
I agree. Vice president.
Here's a good question. If speaking of vice president, if Biden's sitting here watching tonight, is he thinking, "Wow, I really got to jump in this race?" I don't think so.
No.
I mean, he'd be smart too, but he'd be stupid too.
I think the only way he would consider it is if Hillary fell flat on her face tonight.
Yeah, and she did not. Happen. She did great.
Yeah.
And we should talk more about that. We should have talked more about that.
Well,
she was great, I thought.
I thought she was
outstanding.
Not perfect, and I think she can get more specific and better on some things, but I think she was very well prepared.
Yeah, but this is the first debate more than a year away from the thing. I think she did great.
Well, look, I remember the debates of 2008 very well, and
so do
she
I.
did way better.
Yeah.
Way better
than
she did in any of
yes.
those debates. And not that
yes.
she did horribly necessarily in 2008.
Yeah, but she was on
Obama.
Point tonight. And she had some little zingers, but they didn't seem like they were super rehearsed. And
no.
it was like, she did
and,
good.
And she got passionate about stuff at the right
yeah.
time and made some good points.
And Bernie looked a little crazy because his hair and his... And it's the
well,
it's,
Bernie,
it's definitely the
Bernie
like performance.
Bernie did his Bernie thing. If you're a big Bernie supporter, I think he gave you most everything
for,
you
yes.
wanted tonight, except for the gun control stuff.
Except right, but if you aren't a Bernie supporter, like I'm not worried about Bernie supporters. I'm worried about whether this man can win the fucking election.
I don't think he won over a bunch of undecideds tonight, and I don't think a bunch of Hillary supporters are going to jump ship.
My question
tonight.
Is, can he ever? Looking at him tonight and the answers that he gave and the sort of delivery that he gave, can he win over non-democratic, non-democrat
Maybe.
People?
This is a weird
I
year,
mean,
Rachel.
I,
This is a weird anti-establishment populist year.
He's a socialist. I don't know. We'll discuss later. We are way over.
That's just a word.
All right.
But, anyway, let me
we
wrap
will
up
discuss
with,
this
with,
way later.
With my closing thoughts.
Go ahead.
Overall, I actually enjoyed it. It wasn't perfect. There was some BS. I thought the opening statements from most everybody sounded robotic and rehearsed until it got to Bernie, and it sounded much more raw. I think there was some good policy stuff out there, and I think overall it was a pretty good night for progressives. Not perfect. I there's plenty of people I know you're going to nitpick, and we nitpicked some stuff. You know, they didn't get to LGBT rights. They didn't get to reproductive rights. There was a little too much warmongering that they were trying to squeeze out of people other than Webb. But you know what? This is a far cry. Think about the debates from 2000, 2004, and 2008. When you desperately had people like Gore and Kerry, and even in the Democratic primary debates, you had pandering to this non-existent blue dog middle of the road that they think they're going to hold on to and still vote Democrat, except they're really conservative. And that's they've accepted that that's gone. And the future of this party and the future of their constituency is very, very progressive. They're progressive on environmental rights. They're progressive on gun rights. They're progressive on college tuition. I mean, they've it looks like the party has gotten the message finally. And maybe the disastrous midterms were the nail in that coffin, where they said, okay, there's no more pandering to this non-existent middle. We got to go with our base. We can't keep reaching out to these people that have abandoned us a long time ago. And I got the overall sense that we made progress as far as that goes tonight. And certainly, if you're a truly undecided voter and not a partisan, and you tuned into that GOP debate clown show, and you tuned into this one tonight, at the very least, I think you have to be thinking, well, at least these people seem serious, and this other thing seems like a bunch of wackos. Now, that's a biased opinion. I could be dead wrong. Look, maybe they do a poll of undecided voters tomorrow, and everybody says they're voting for Trump. I have no idea. Okay, but from where I came from, I thought it was a pretty good night for progressives and for Democrats. Not perfect, not the best, but pretty good. Would you agree?
I agree.
Good. We got some good stuff coming up. We promised that the whole crew will be more sober next time, but, you know, it's a late night. It's a late night, and it was a rough day, and we had to get through a whole debate, so there may have been a little
You got to drink during the debate. I mean, come on. You can't just watch it for 4 hours. Like, it's too much.
Well, we have some cool news. Miss Arliss Bunny from Daily Kos, regular contributor and host of Hopping Mad podcast, where she has some great topics. She's going to be joining us very soon, possibly in the next couple of days.
We're going to talk about the economy with her.
Mm-hmm.
I'll do lots of research first.
Yes, yes. We're going to have lots of good stuff coming up there. I just did
We
another...
still promised the SCOTUS debate, you guys.
Yeah,
I promise
coming.
We're doing the Supreme Court thing. I just want to make sure we get this right. Yeah. So.
So stay tuned for when we have Arliss on, and hopefully some other Daily Kos type people. I just wrote penned another diary tonight you can find on there. It was called A Good Night for Progressives, I think I called it, my summation of the debate. And stay tuned, spread the word. We'll be back. As usual, I'm Travis.
I'm Rachel.
I'm Dana.
Oh, Dana's still awake. Awesome.
I'm back.
Back in the saddle. It was fun. We'll do
debates.
This.
I'll do this too.
We'll have to do another one of these, I guess, after every debate, even the Republican one, which will probably
we'll
be
all wasted.
We will be
so
too drunk probably to even
wait
make
for
it
that
to
one.
The mic. So that should be
wait for that one.
That'll be some great listening. All right, have a good night, and see you later.
Good night.